This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing. Three ball. Perfect. Garland went to the lane. Locked up. Mobley. Pow. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo TV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com. The Cleveland Cavaliers winning streak is over, and I'm still not over it. It's been 2 days, and I want to know what anyone is supposed to do defending the three-point line. I would argue that the last two Cavs losses, which both came with questionable reviews that every third-party person felt that the Cavs got the raw end of that deal, I would say that neither of those losses count in my personal record book, but they count in the real record book, which is all that matters at the end of the day. Joining me today to move on from that game, to just completely sidestep it, is my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I think it's unbelievable that you get to open the podcast complaining and then tell the world, but to be healthy is Carter. I got gripes too, brother. It's fine. It's fine. We've got a lovely guest here. We've got more important things to worry about, like a guaranteed playoff spot, unlike some franchises, and an honest basketball, unlike some franchises. And I'm looking forward to talking about that.
We are going to discuss some honest basketball and a little bit of bad news as well, unfortunately. But I am very thrilled to welcome to the podcast Andrew Claudio from the Knicks Film School. You guys do, honestly, you guys do a terrific job. I listen to your pregame podcast for matchups that don't even involve the Cavs, because I think you do such a great job of highlighting other teams. And I think for a fan base that has a reputation of being very obnoxious, I think you do a terrific job. I think it's one of the better kind of local podcasts. And of course, part of the Blue Wire Network. Shout out to Blue Wire. Andrew, how you doing, buddy?
Guys, thank you so much for having me. I will do my very best not to completely destroy the obnoxious New Yorker stereotype throughout this conversation, while also I can appreciate Atlanta slander if you want to keep going with that, as someone who has had their battles with Atlanta in the past. Wherever you want to take this conversation, I'm all for it.
You know, let's actually, just for the health of myself and for Carter, just so that we can complain a little bit, I do think that we need to relook at kind of the landing space fouls, because DeJounte Murray jumped 6 feet forward for Evan Mobley, who is jumping straight up and down to collide with him. And I'm actually at the point now
and
that
pulled
I
a don't... smooth criminal, by the way, just a 45 degree landing angle somehow.
I just think that we're now at the point that I don't even want to hear complaints about poor contests for 3-point shots, because the only way you can contest 3-point shots in today's NBA is by jumping to the side and kind of getting your hand up in their face, right? Like, you can't go straight up in front of them, because if a jump shooter decides that they're going to leap forward and extend their legs, most of the time they're getting that call, or they're getting 3 free throws, or they're getting a flagrant assessed to them, as we saw with the Cavs loss in Utah. And 3 free throws or a 4-point or 7-point possession as the result of a call, like that, I would rather give up a wide open shot. And it's just so frustrating. I don't think there needs to be massive reforms with how the game is officiated, but I would like to see a crackdown on that. And I'd like to see a crackdown on moving screens, because when we saw like the Warriors do their moving screens, it wasn't that they were the only team that was doing it. We're the only team that had the shooting talent to really make it painful. And now the shooting talent around the league is so ridiculous that all these moving screens on the perimeter, I think, are just a little unfair. And we got to give defenders a chance. So give Evan Mobley a chance. Give him Defensive Player of the Year. Let's stop with all these ridiculous landing space fouls.
Yeah, it's just, you know, bro, it's just so hard. You know, like, I just, the second JB challenged, I said, that's a good challenge and we're going to lose.
Nate Duncan said it was a good challenge, and he doesn't compliment the Cavs ever.
So, you know, it's just one of those things where, like, and you know, you're already at a fever pitch when you play against a team that, like the Hawks, because of the way Trey plays. You know, Andrew, I'm sure you can sympathize with that. How many non-basketball plays get rewarded? And I do think, by the way, there is a bit of a spillover when you have a lead star that plays that way, where they're drawing fouls on such marginal contact that when you do give Onyeka Okongwu a little bump, all of a sudden they're like, well, he called one earlier, we got to call one here. And like, you know, I just think it really gets in refs' heads. And they have a really, really, you know, like, again, every time we get on here to complain about officiating, I end up going back to the humanity of these people and being like, man, it's got to be so hard. You not only are you trying to nail the action, you also have to avoid getting tricked. That's like, that's just a bridge too far. So I don't know, man. It's tough. It's frustrating. And the fact that, you know, I think the Cavs have gotten a pretty raw deal, two losses in a row. On review,
got reviewed.
Is like, man, that's just not what you want to see.
So I'm back and forth on this because this is the first year that the Knicks have had the type of creators and initiators in Jalen Brunson, in Julius Randle, and honestly, lately with Emmanuel Quickley, where you can take advantage of some of the foul baiting, like the side to side swipe is a move that Julius Randle had used all season. We'll get to that, I'm sure. The Jalen Brunson ability to draw contact on drives has led to his free throw shooting this year. So the Knicks, I can't be hypocritical and be like Knicks haven't benefited from this. But to your point, that series 2 years ago when the Knicks played the Hawks, like Trey was doing the Chris Paul stop in the middle of the paint. Like it was, you get by your defender and then you stop to catch your defender and then pretend like they ran into you. And then there were some shots where, like, the only thing I could equate it to is that he was personally headbutting his defender in the face from behind and he was getting the calls. So like that stuff annoys me. I think like the moving screens, I mean, yes, a team like Golden State is a team that takes advantage of it, but like the teams that don't, like, because they're not even good at shooting, Miami might be the worst. Like, I don't know if Bam Adebayo's ever planted his feet on a screen, yet he gets rewarded like he's Kevin Garnett. So, look, this we're not the only three having this conversation, as the league has made it seem over the past couple weeks or so, and that the officiating this year has been not the best, not the greatest. And look, I don't know if there isn't an uphaul that you could do, like a big move that you could make or big change that you could make to the officiating. It's just flatly become much more difficult to play defense. And it's why I think it's contributed to one of the best offensive seasons we've ever seen in the sport's history.
Yeah. And to me, what drove me nuts with yesterday's game, and obviously I don't expect you to have seen the game, but like,
Justin, Cavs live money line. I was right there with you. I was watching the game. Don't worry.
You, in a lot of ways, you were more aggrieved than either of us.
I said the same thing. That's a good challenge. We have a Knicks Film School group chat because we're honestly watching because there's a faint hope of the four seed. Obviously, that with Randle down, we'll see if that's even possible. There's also we wanted Atlanta to lose. Like there's parts of that that's involved. There's another fact. We have Dallas's pick, but it's top 10 protected. So there is a world where Dallas needs to win and Atlanta needs to lose so they could fall behind them in the standings. So there's those selfish reasons as well. I was very much like, okay, that's a good challenge. And then like DeJounte pushes off on the shot that makes it a 4-point lead as well. So
yeah, what drove me nuts was that in the first like quarter and a half, it was a free-flowing game. They were allowing a lot of contact both ways. I was like, wow, like I don't know if this even plays to the Cavs' advantage, but I kind of like that it's just been consistent. And then it was like there was a shift where it's like, you know what? What if for tonight Okongwu was Joel Embiid? And then all of a sudden Trae Young's getting the line. And then the Cavs are getting a bunch of calls. And I'm not going to act like it was one side or anything like that. It was that one specific call that drove me nuts. But yeah, it was a lot, but at the end of the day, the Cavs were very shorthanded in that game. I was a little disappointed because the other part of me rooting for Atlanta to lose is I want Toronto to get the 8th seed because whether the Cavs, as you said, 4 or 5, I want the Cavs to play a team that just had to go through Toronto, that just had the living hell beat out of them if they do, in fact, advance to the second round. So I'm being selfish there. But let's move on. Let's move on from our gripes. Let's talk about a matchup that is far more interesting. between two very good teams, in my opinion, which is the Cavs and the Knicks. They will be playing Friday. The Cavs have a chance to lock up the four seed with a win on Friday. Injury updates for it. Both Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell sprained their ankles, but they both appear to be good to go. There was no mention of Garland's ankle today at practice. JB said that Mitchell went through everything, got his treatment. He's the expectation is going to be that he's good to go. Credit to Kelsey Russo for those quotes. Jared Allen with his groin injury is listed as doubtful. Isaac Okoro with his knee is out. Sam Merrill, Dylan Windler, Isaiah Mobley are with the charge, but Diakite does appear to be available for the Cavs. And then for the Knicks, a real kind of heartbreaking loss for you guys, which is that Julius Randle injured himself and will be reevaluated in 2 weeks, which ends his regular season. And looking at the calendar, first round series, which at this point looks very, very likely that it's going to be Cavs and Knicks. That's probably going to start April 15th, 2 weeks from today, when he'd be evaluated is April 13th. This is a real tough blow for the Knicks.
Yeah. So I got to be honest, I'm still processing it because this man's career in New York has been so fascinating to observe. Obviously, from my perspective as a fan, I think anybody in that locker room would probably tell you the same thing. The media people that have had the access to tell you about Julius Randle's time in New York would absolutely tell you the roller coaster that he's been through is one that no New York athlete, and I'd argue maybe no athlete has seen in their time there. When he got to New York in 2019, he was the consolation prize to what was supposed to be like, we're getting Zion, we're getting Kevin Durant, we're getting Kyrie, we're getting Jesus, like every single available player was going to come play for the Knicks in the summer of 2019. And we ended up with Julius Randle and a bunch of eight or ninth men. And all of this pressure went onto him that was probably unfairly put onto him. And then you come into the pandemic shortened season. He's hitting every mid-range shot, every long two. He's shooting 41% from three. And like the city is his and he makes second team all NBA and he's most improved player. Then you get last season when there's a gigantic regression to the mean and you have people cheering for his backup to play as often as possible in Obi Toppin. And look, we're guilty of this. The movement from, you know, the fan base that was like, find any trade partner you can, just like ham sandwich time is what a lot of the fan base was like whatever you could trade him for. And then this season, the come to Jesus moment and the way he's played, the way he's accepted a new role, the way he's allowed Jalen Brunson to really initiate the offense. And as a result, that gravity allows Julius Randle to be better. The shots he's decided to take, his shot diet is so much more pleasing to the modern game and so much more sustainable than what he was 2 years ago with open gyms. And then this happens and it's like, for all season, he's like stepped up in some very big moments. Like, and we were ready to see him erase the demons of the Atlanta series from 2 years ago. And for this to happen with five games left, he has not missed a game this season. I can't stress that enough. Jalen Brunson has missed time. RJ Barrett has missed time. Everyone, I think, but Emmanuel Quickly has missed time this year. And Julius Randle's been an Iron Man. And for him to just land wrong on Bam Adebayo's ankle, it's tough. Now, the ironic part is Randle wasn't playing all that great over the past five or six games. And he was reverting to some old habits last year. And there is a movement from the fan base that, you know, now we get to see what it's like when you have other people that have to step up. Maybe you can go a little smaller in some lineups. It's not going to help you against a team like the Cavs, which is why I'm very worried about a potential seven game series against the Cavs. But as far as in a vacuum, they're going to miss a guy that's an all-star, most likely going to make his second all-NBA team. And I personally just can't help but feel bad for him. Like, the guy worked his butt off this summer to make sure that last year was the anomaly and not the 2 years ago season was the anomaly. And you know, there's a very good chance that his regular season's definitely over. And look, he's being reevaluated in 2 weeks, which falls into like the day before game one of the first round of the playoffs. Every Twitter doctor we've reached out to has been like, yeah, that's a 3-4 week injury. Like this is not good, especially the guy his size landing on his ankle that way. So Yeah. You know, and, we're still processing.
You can't keep your conditioning
it, you know?
Up, right? Like, you can't keep your conditioning up if your ankle's bad.
Yeah. No, you can't. It's a tough blow. It's you're losing your all-star, you know? So we'll see how the Knicks adjust.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, last year, the Cavs kind of had a few players where it was like, if they're not available, they don't have a shot, you know? Like, you know, when we were talking about postseason chances, you know, we talked about, like, they lose Darius. That, like, there are certain players on your team, especially, you know, at the tier that the Cavs and Knicks are in currently, where, like, you know, like, your chances of winning a playoff series just go to functionally zero. Like, is that kind of where you're at if Randall can't come back? Like, can they, do you think they can win a series without him against the Cavaliers?
I recognize the podcast I'm on that it'll be blasphemy if I were to say that. What I'll say is they have overcome so much adversity this year. The game that Randall got hurt in against the Heat, they actually found this lineup with RJ Barrett at the four, with Josh Hart playing the three. And you have Emmanuel Quickley, who, look, the more he plays, the more I'm wondering if, like, maybe he's actually, like, a star on the rise. Like, he's going to most likely win the Sixth Man of the Year award. And
he looks closer to the number three guy than I think anybody else on that roster.
He is. That's ship sailed. Like, the RJ Barrett conversation is a completely different conversation now.
And I want to get to that conversation later on.
Yeah, of course. I just, Emmanuel Quickley, his ability to play defense both at point of attack and in the passing lanes, he's become such a weapon. And then if he's shooting well, like, he'll go through some cold streaks. Like, he had this nationally televised double overtime game against Boston where he had his career high in points at the time, was their best player in the two overtimes. And it was like the betting odds for him to become Sixth Man of the Year shifted. He went from like plus 1200 going into the weekend to the favorite by the time the game ended Sunday night. And as much as some might cry, like, New York bias, I also think it was just like, oh, now we can actually start paying attention to what Emmanuel Quickley has been all year, because he did it on a national spotlight with, you know, against a team like Boston. I'll also add, like, every lineup that he is in is a positive lineup. He's just been that much of a difference. And so this now, if Tibbs is willing to go small, which is the biggest if possible, they may have some advantages that they can create. Mm-hmm. I would pick the Cavs in that series now, is what I would say. I'm not saying the Knicks can't win that series. They've overcome adversity all season, every single time. Like, they were missing Jalen Brunson for that game against Boston. They won. They had this road trip where Jalen Brunson went down with a similar ankle injury. And we were all like, all right, 0-5. We're now going to be battling for the play-in. They go 3-2 on that road trip. And it's like, you know, crisis averted as a result. Every single time we've needed this team to win a game, they have. This is going to be the first real test of, can you win a game? Because it looks like Randall's not coming back, at least as far as for the immediate future. So I'm going to trust in that. It's a lot harder to make the case for it when you're going up against a team like Cleveland, which I do respect. So,
yeah. And the interesting thing to me is the Cavs have had issues at times with teams that go 4 or 5 out, right? Like, when they're really able to space the floor. And what's concerned me about the Knicks, and I thought that this was going to be a very, if it does occur, that it was going to be a very hard fought series. And I think the Knicks still have enough talent to make it a hard fought series, because they do have the wings, right? They can play that kind of four out style. I think Josh Hart would probably be, if I was doing coach from the couch kind of analysis of the Knicks, I'd probably start Josh Hart at the four. But like, I think that the Cavs talent level without Randall, I think that would come through. But I think that there's enough things that the Knicks can do to certainly make it interesting. Do you expect them to go that route, or do you think Obi Toppin is going to get the first look at power forward?
Obi's going to get the first look. And the thing about the Knicks, and specifically Thibodeau, like, this is the Keith Bogans guy, where it really doesn't matter who starts, it matters who finishes. So the starting lineup, just as much as you'd like to get off to a good start, he's very much the type of coach that cares about, like, keeping it even for the first 6-7 minutes. And then my best lineup is my bench unit. Like, the reason the Knicks were the 4 seed 2 years ago was partly because Julius Randle turned into Larry Bird. but also because they had this second unit led by Derrick Rose that was just blitzing teams. And this five-man lineup that was like plus 21 for the final like 30 or so games. So I would imagine they go Obi to start. And then he, I don't know if it's unfairly or fairly, but by default is the Keith Bogans or the Elfrid Payton, where Josh Hart's the closer. You're here to start the first 7 minutes of each half, and then we'll pivot to this other lineup. Now, look, we'll see. There's when Obi was hurt earlier in the year, Tibbs went to this Isaiah Hartenstein, Jericho Sims backup unit. So he went with two centers, you know, so he kept his rim protection, kept his rebounding, kept his offensive rebounding, which has been their strength all season. So I wouldn't be shocked if we saw some of that in some certain lineups. But yeah, I think Obi's next man up. This is why the Knicks didn't just dump him for anything at the deadline. This is why in year three, even though he's still only getting like 12, 13 minutes a game, it was like, I believe in Obi. He's an important part of the team. And he did the Tibbs speak. And it's like, this is the break glass in case of emergency situation with Obi Toppin. So
do you, one thing that, you know, just looking at the Knicks stats, one thing that I don't think I realized until really looking at the per 36 is that you lose with Randall is he's your only volume 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
He takes 8.4 per 36 of the row of the, like the top rotation guys. Quickly takes 6.8. RJ takes 5.6. Brunson only takes 4.8. I couldn't believe.
Yeah. They're all pull-ups.
You know, Toppin is the other guy. He takes 8.5 per 36. I mean, how worried are you about, you know, one of the things that I've felt very angsty about for the Cavs in any playoff series is getting bombed off the floor from three, because the Cavs don't take a lot and they don't make a lot. But like, it feels like the Knicks probably lost a little bit of their take a lot, you know, variance. How concerned are you of their ability to kind of, you know, make hay offensively without that volume 3-point shooting?
Well, that's the other big thing that you lose when you lose Julius, you know, because like it's so much less about the volume that he's taking, you know, because like it is like, yeah, he's taking 8 threes per 36. And that's been the big change with him this year, that he was so hesitant because he's never been a 3-point shooter. And then he went into this offseason with assistant head coach Johnny Bryant. And it was like, just when you get it, shoot. Like that, just you being that weapon. And if you're just a 33-34% shooter, the volume will be enough that they have to respect the shot. It opens lanes. And there will be games. Like my thought was like, yes, you could probably survive with Obi taking the same shots, or you just mix it up with more ball movement and Quentin Grimes gets an uptick in shots. RJ Barrett, who hasn't been great from three, but has been mostly been just a catch and shoot guy all season. You know, you could find other ways to fill it. The issue I have is more like there are these games where Randall will go 6 of 8 or 6 of 11 from three. And that's like there. I expected in a Cavs series that's like, oh, well, game two was Julius Randall game, you know. So
we remember him hitting 8 threes against us. Yeah, we very well remember that.
So those games this year have been like, listen, say what you want about Julius, they don't win tonight without his shot making. And his shot making is one of the reasons why, despite his flaws, despite some of his slower processing speed, despite some of his turnovers, the shot making makes up for it. And that's just not going to happen if he doesn't play against the Cavs in a first round series. So they're just going to have to find other ways to find offense. And I think this is where, look, I may be talking him up a lot, but because I've watched every minute he's played of his career, but this is where Emmanuel Quickley may actually come into play as like a big difference maker, because he might become their second most important offensive player by the time a series against the Cavs is over. And I personally think he's up for the challenge. And so maybe, you know, maybe those are some famous last words, but that's just how good he's been, especially over the last 2-3 months since he's taken such a bigger role as the number three guy.
Justin, I'm going to bite one of your questions that you have in the chat, because I feel like it, or in our rundown, and it's about, you know, the Quickley point kind of made me think of the fact that they're probably going to be throwing Isaac Okoro on Brunson. Mm-hmm. And Isaac did really, really well there. it does feel like Quickley is going to have to cook whatever other guard the Cavs put on them, because like you can't have both guards even at like 75% and have a shot in the series, right?
Oh, not at all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's where, but see, I, again, the Quentin Grimes factor of it all, the last like four or five games, it's recency bias, because he hasn't been this all year. He's averaging over 20 points a game over his last five. He stepped up.
He's awesome.
This is going to sound stupid, but I actually got scared of the Knicks watching the Rising Stars game where he was just bombing threes. I was like, oh my God. Like it was like giving me the Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Dion Waiters Rising Stars vibe, where I'm just like, oh man, this guy gets really hot. And yeah, like as Carter said, I'm fascinated to see kind of the chess match of how the guards go, because Isaac Okoro, that first game against the Knicks were making a run, and Okoro at that point was kind of out of the rotation or not a significant part. And they put Okoro on Brunson, and he just completely shut his water off for the rest of those games. And you look at for the season, Jalen Brunson is shooting 42% from the floor and 30% from three versus Cleveland. It's the second lowest true shooting percentage against any team this year. The only one that's higher is Toronto, which he actually shot better against Toronto, but some of that is kind of free throw shooting differences there. But yeah, Okoro's done a really good job on Brunson, and with the Knicks already being last when it comes to assisted field goals, do you think there's enough supplemental playmaking if for a stretch of the game Okoro is making life very difficult for Jalen Brunson?
I honestly do. This is how good Quickley's been. This is how good Quentin Grimes has been lately, and I can't say enough about Josh Hart and how
I love him. I'm a big fan.
It's not even like a point forward. He's just like a point wing, a ball handling wing that initiates offense, but also can beat you on a drive if you're expecting, like if you're playing for the pass. So like, again, this lineup that they stumbled on the other night against Miami throughout the last, it's pretty much since the trade deadline when they traded for Josh Hart, it's become the closing lineup is a center, a true center, Julius Randle, Jalen Brunson, and then Josh Hart, and then pick one of the three, RJ, Quickley, or Grimes. And what we saw the other night, where Tibbs decided to not to go with Jalen Brunson down the stretch and went with Isaiah Hartenstein and the other four wings, and it like stepped on Miami's throat. Like I'd never seen that happen. Like, Jimmy Butler wasn't healthy, I get it, but like that's heat culture that happened to. And I just was like, oh, did they figure something out here? Now, look, I don't think that's going to work every night or even work like in a 7-game series against one team. But they have multiple wings to throw at you now that with Randle, he commands a lot of the shot diet. He commands a lot of the gravity. And when he's got it going, you don't mind it. And when he's, you know, making quick decisions and actually playing defense, he's like one of the better players on the floor. And then when he was going through the stretch that he was when he got hurt, it's like, do we have to win in spite of Julius tonight? So, there's not going to be a world where the Cavs don't have the best player on the floor probably at all times of that series. But I don't know. I'm still optimistic about at least it being a competitive series because of the who's going to step up tonight aspect of these younger wings in a series like that.
I mean, it does feel like, go ahead, Justin.
No, you got it.
All right. Well, I was going to say, it really does seem like they have the depth and they have the versatility to play a lot of styles. And I think that's one of the biggest questions for the Cavs is we know the Cavs have a fastball that's goddamn elite. Like it's really, really, really good. We know they have another look that they can go to that works, which is Caris LeVert with the core four rather than Isaac Okoro. But they don't have, or at least it doesn't seem to us at this point, they don't have the personnel to really do a lot of different styles, right? Like they can go kind of four out with one of Mobley or Allen at the five, but positional versatility and scheme versatility is something that I just don't think they have the depth within the rotation right now, especially with Dean Wade seeming limited. And the Knicks do have that ability to throw out a lot of different styles. And Manuel Quickley, as you said, he's been terrific. Like I think people people understand the game through kind of archetypes and just like certain coaches, like they'll think of, oh, he's a defensive coach, so I put him in this box. And Emmanuel Quickley, because he's such like a electric scorer off the bench, you assume, oh, he's a Lou Will. He's a someone kind of in that vein, but he's a really damn good defender. Like that's the rarest thing, is to find that spark plug guy off the bench that is a lockdown defender, probably their best kind of point of attack defender on the team. Carter, I see you want to talk.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, like, you know, I haven't watched a ton of Knicks this year, just full disclosure. Like, I haven't.
How dare you?
I know. I'm kind of just curious, because everyone tells me Quickley is quite a good defender, but in the minutes I've watched, he's not a super tall guy, not incredibly long, not incredibly strong. Like what makes him such an impactful defender? Because he doesn't look like, my eye test does not say this guy has all the markings of a very, very helpful point of attack defender. So can you like be explicitly dive in a little bit about what makes him so effective on that end?
So there's two. So you said point of attack, which I think there is. That's his one limitation, but it's not.
Oh, interesting.
Really? It's okay. Not, but it's not like of the things he does well on defense, that would be, I think, is the weakest. But I don't think he's bad at it. You know, he's just so much better off ball. He's so much better on playing passing lanes. He's so good at knowing where to be and anticipating like two passes away, one pass away. The amount of steals he's gotten this year on just anticipating the pass to the corner, and like all of a sudden he's Darrell Revis and going up for an interception. I know it's 2023, so as a Jets fan, I should use Sauce Gardner instead, since that's a more modern reference. Regardless,
Revis Island was a cultural moment. Don't believe me, you don't have to walk away from it.
Hall of Famer Darrell Revis. I still wear it with pride. Point being, that's the type of impact he's had. And when you got his wingspan as well, where he'll guard, like if they don't really play a lot of zone. In fact, I don't think they play any zone. But when they're playing this drop coverage that some of their weaker defenders have to play because they're not able to switch as well, he's the one that's actually making up for it on the switches and running out and chasing guys off the line as a result. And look, as far as just like the lineup data is concerned, like the +7 on the year for a while this season, it was even better. And then he started starting and playing next to some weaker defenders as a result. Specifically how he is on anticipating passing lanes, that's the biggest thing. Like that's where he's made his mark and made life hell for a lot of defenders. I don't think he's ever gonna be like the name that got thrown around the other night was Drew Holiday in our post game.
Yeah, I don't think he's got the strength for that.
I just don't think he's that type of guy. Like it's like Clay was someone that guards you point of attack. We haven't really been able, like Jason Terry was a guy that I thought Quickley could eventually become, where he's not necessarily known for being a defender, but he was elite off the bench. And this defensive, it's almost like Jason Terry, but with like elite perimeter defense as a result. So I don't, like Quentin Grimes has been the one picking up like the other team's best guy in crunch time. Lately, it's been Josh Hart as a result, but it's been like Josh Hart with Quickley playing one passing lane, with RJ playing another passing lane. And look, if they're able to get Quentin Grimes on the floor with this, then it's like you have these four wings that you're able to be. So you're gonna have to beat them with your size, not necessarily with your passing and your skill. So
right, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like I honestly do feel for you guys, because the thing I like about this Knicks team, and it doesn't get talked about enough, like you assume New York, and you look at the way that the Knicks have been built historically the last couple decades, it's like, okay, we're going to take some shortcuts, we're going to try to make a splashy move in the summer or whatever. And this Knicks team is just, it's well run. Like I really do think that it's well run. Like you guys have found talent in the margins. A guy like Emmanuel Quickley, Quentin Grimes, like there's depth. I thought Josh Hart was just such a smart pickup. And you know, sometimes necessity breeds innovation, and maybe we'll see that a little bit with Julius Randle. But you lose an all NBA talent, like you're going to be worse. But you might discover something that you can carry forward, because I think Knicks actually have the foundation of a team that can be good moving forward. I think this looks like a more sustainable team than what they had in 2021, and they have the assets to get better. So maybe you find something that you kind of put in the back of your mind for later on. But yeah, like you said, it's going to be a test to see who stands up and who gives the support. And you just have to hope that the support is half as good as the support we get from Zoom, because support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
Very sneaky, Justin. Very
professional.
Sneaky.
Professional. Wow.
I thought you were about to set up a question, and that was a great swerve. Andrew, I want to ask about Mitchell Robinson. Mm. He is, you know, he and Hardenstein are, you know, the remaining, you know, true bigs that we're going to expect to see. You know, because even Toppin, you know, even though he's tall, doesn't exactly play with a ton of force, shall we say. Is this Robinson's first time in the playoffs? He was not in that Hawks series, correct?
He was not. He hurt his, it was a foot injury that he was out for the rest of the year and then missed. That was a Nerlens Noel Taj Gibson tandem throughout that postseason.
Another dishonest win for the Hawks. Mark it up. I forgot that he was out.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you expecting out of him? Because it does feel like he's going to have to carry a lot of weight on the interior in terms of trying to, you know, keep the Cavs at bay. You know, the Knicks are not exactly the most stout defensive team, but they're, you know, they're not terrible. I mean, they're
no, you hit it. Their defense for a Tibbs team is not their calling card. You know, like that for a Tibbs team, the first two seasons, it's been top 10 defense or top 11 defense and then bottom 10 offense. And it's not first to 120. It's let's see if we could hold you under 110 and we'll just try to score more than you. Yeah. It,
by the way, Mike Brown, Tom Thibodeau leading the league's best offenses.
Right. What a time.
Down is up.
It just goes to show you how we put these coaches in a box unfairly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how you ask that question. What do you expect from Mitchell Robinson? Not how good is he? Not what do you think he can do? Like, what to expect from Mitchell Robinson is the million-dollar question in New York. Because
consistency is kind of the whole thing with him, right?
There are nights when he looks like the most dominant offensive rebounder, like better than Steven Adams in the NBA. And then there are nights where you wonder if, like, he's just kind of going through the motions because there's something funny on Snapchat after the game that he wants to take part in. And look, it's tough because that elite version is a difference maker. That 9-game winning streak they had a couple weeks ago was largely in part to like the Josh Hart energy boost that it gave that second unit. But it also was the fact that Mitchell Robinson played like a beast for a good 2-3 weeks and looked like this is a center of a team that could make a run in an Eastern Conference, like in the Eastern Conference. And then the last couple of weeks, it's just been like, I don't know if you're just afraid that you're going to get hurt. I don't know if you're like, it's not even like game to game. It's play to play. You know, are you going to get this offensive rebound? Are you going to go up for this, contest this shot? Are you going to, you know, set this hard screen? And that's just been a problem his whole career. And the funny part is, I don't know if this is going to lead to a Hartenstein question. Tibbs has been closing with Isaiah Hartenstein lately, and how good this guy has been. He's the best. I mean, for my money, he's the best backup center in the NBA. The way he's been able to he's not a floor spacer in the traditional sense of like Al Horford can shoot threes, because Isaiah Hartenstein doesn't shoot threes, but he doesn't clog the dunker spot. So,
well, and part of it too is because he's such a good passer, you have to get up on him, right? I think that's something that people don't think about enough, and that's part of why the Cavs, even though they don't have outside spacing, people play up on Evan Mobley because he's such a good playmaker, right? And you don't want him to have a head of steam. So it's just one of those things where you can have gravity without necessarily being a three-point shooter, just because you need to be able to take away those passing lanes, and you don't want to give a talented playmaker an advantage.
Exactly. Yeah,
the Nuggets really got to regret trading him for JaVale McGee.
You think?
A couple
or
years
the
ago.
Clippers, like the Clippers. When I was talking to a Clippers guy for when the Knicks were playing them, they were like, "Yeah, we our biggest issue this year has been backup center. We have no idea why they let Isaiah Hartenstein walk. Yeah. You know, so
and for the Cavs, well, there just wasn't an opportunity, right? Because like when you look at the Cavs, you're getting 48 minutes of either Jared Allen or Evan Mobley at center. Like, I if Evan Mobley is your backup center through staggering, that becomes the best backup center in the league pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah,
but,
true.
But yeah, but I mean, that's would be absolutely cheating. I do agree with your assessment, though. And it's interesting, too, that the foul rates come down in the Knicks. Some of my big market conspiracies start flooding in there because I don't see him playing entirely different. But he is a real difference maker and someone that, I mean, especially with Randall out, like I almost wonder if Tibbs just goes back to some of his Tib roots and just plays big, right? Like, and tries to keep bigs on the floor, two bigs on the floor as much as possible. Because if there was ever a time, like, I think the Cavs big men pose a threat to just about any team. But if there was ever a time that you wouldn't want to lose a big body like Julius Randle, it's against this version of Evan Mobley that we've seen over the last 35 games here, where he's a 19 point per game player. Now he's throwing out like these 26 and 15 games and is just turning into Godzilla, attacking every mismatch and smaller person that gets put on him. I can see Tibbs seeing that and saying, with maybe the exception of Josh Hart, just because he's so strong, but I could see him wanting big bodies out there.
Which so, is why, real quick, I think it's why the second unit, Tibbs is stuck with this nine-man rotation, and the first man up has been Deuce McBride, who, man, do I want to see more of that kid. The problem is that he's only ever filled minutes when a wing has gotten hurt. This is the first time, like specifically Julius has gotten hurt, and we've had to see what Tibbs is going to do when his backup four is now his starting four. And I'm telling you, I think the backup four is going to be Isaiah Hartenstein, and we'll just get Jericho Sims as a backup center, and then we'll see what happens. I have to believe that Tibbs saw what we all saw the other night against Miami and wants to see how it works. This all wing lineup. I also look, RJ Barry, I'm sure the conversation's coming up soon, is not the same.
I have an important thing I want to talk about, and the reason I brought up Mitchell Robinson. Pre All-Star break, the Cavs were eighth in the league in defensive rebound rate. They have cut Kevin Love. Dean Wade has fallen out of the rotation, and when they are healthy, Jetty Osman is often getting minutes over Lamar Stevens. Would anyone like to venture to guess what the Cavaliers' defensive rebound rate has been post All-Star break in the league?
17th.
30th.
Oh, wow.
So this team has been an absolute sieve on the defensive board since. They're playing way, way, way smaller. The lineups that have only they're playing a lot of lineups where it's Mobley at the five and Jetty at the four. Yeah. With Donnie and Darius also out there. They're small.
And this is a small team right now. Jarrett's missed time too, right?
Absolutely. So this is a small team right now. And this is a team that, even when they're healthy, they don't exactly have burly dudes that are like, they don't have like Montrezl Harrell types that are just carving out space with their core. And I do feel like, Mitchell Robinson has to be awesome in any Cavs Knicks series, because the road to the Knicks getting a good offense is folks like Josh Hart, folks like Mitchell Robinson, just absolutely abusing the Cavs on the defensive on the offensive glass and just generating extra possession. And I just think that if I'm as a Cavs fan, that is one of the parts of the roster that concerns me the most. It's concerned me ever since Dean fell out of the rotation. Obviously the Knicks are worse equipped than they were 2 days ago to exploit that, but it does mean that the burden on their great offensive rebounders goes way, way up.
And this is where Josh Hart being the acquisition at the deadline was intentional, because Deuce McBride was basically the backup wing. Quickly was the backup point guard, and then Obi was the backup power forward, and then Hartenstein was the backup center. And then Deuce McBride just like filled the gap wherever it needed to be, whether it be the two or the three. And then Josh Hart came, and at first it was like, Deuce McBride's playing 11 minutes. You went and traded a first round pick for Josh Hart. And then you saw like, oh no, he's taking some of RJ's minutes, some of Grimes's minutes. And the way he rebounds, he can be a weapon in this sense that you're talking about. And look, I didn't realize they were 30th. That actually, the Knicks fans that are going to eventually listen to this might actually feel a little more confident that a team that struggles on the defensive boards like that is going to go up against the Knicks. I'll also say, like, the Tibbs having a top seven offense, it's intentional in the sense that they are not as efficient on their first shot. And that's been one of the criticisms about the offense all year is like, we have no idea what it's going to look like in a playoff series when you kind of have to be more efficient on your first shot. But with Tibbs, it's been like, we don't care about the first shot. We're just going to get like four or five shots a possession until we get a chance to score.
He's stealing the Nick Nurse playbook. What's going on?
It's the Nick Nurse. It's what Memphis did last year. It's very much like, we're going to get as many chances as we can at a basket on this possession. And, you know, we'll see if that comes back to bite him in the playoffs, and especially now without Julius, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my concern would be more so when the Cavs go to their bench, that they would get exploited on the offensive glass, because Allen is a strong defensive rebounder. I'd still like to see him get to a lead eventually as his body kind of fills out. Evan Mobley's taking big strides there. Donovan Mitchell's a good rebounder. Isaac Okoro has shown some growth there, but the advantage that the Cavs had in the past was you had an elite one come in with Kevin Love, right? And you had Dean Wade that would provide that strong defensive rebounding. And Lamar Stevens, I really do like him at power forward, but him not being a strong rebounder at that position is certainly kind of one of those things to keep an eye on. But I do have kind of a nuanced question here when it does come to RJ Barrett, which is, what the hell?
We've been asking the same thing for about 4 months now.
I don't get it, because like, even 2 years ago, he was a very strong defensive player. And for that reason, I was like, you know what? I'd probably be willing to kind of go through the ebbs and flows of him on the offensive end of the court, because at least he's bringing that strong baseline. But then you look at the last 2 years, those defensive metrics have come down and down. And this year, they're like flat out bad across the board. Like, his defense has been really bad. And it's funny, there was a ranking of the Cavs and Knicks players that was going around on Twitter today.
Shout out Stacey Patton, yes, from the Strickland, who was the one who created that ranking and got
Stinky.
Yes, and I was Cavs Twitter ignited as I saw. Yes.
And I was sitting there and I was like really thinking about it. And I was like, what? Are we sure he's above Caris LeVert in this ranking? Because Caris has been a good defensive player. He has actually been a much more efficient offensive player. He shot threes well this year. Is it just volume? Like, what's going on with RJ Barrett? And this frankly breaks my heart, because as a Canadian, as someone that's been rooting, like, this was our Michael Jordan that was coming along, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has taken that torch and he's running with it. But like, what the hell?
Yeah, we I wish I had a good answer for you, because so I want to be nice, because I'm not RJ Barrett has had a different responsibility, a different role every season of his career. Year one, he was thrust into this weird rotation of like all these power forwards on the floor at the same time. When Julius got brought onto the Knicks to be the consolation prize to KD, RJ Barrett, that was his rookie season. So he dealt with the worst spacing and probably the worst development possible for a rookie that season. Year two, Tibbs notified or noticed what he did well, and it was on driving. It was these pistol sets, and they took advantage of his ability to live at the rim. He just couldn't finish all that well, but he developed the corner 3-point shot and shot 40% from three. And it was like, all right, well, there's stuff here to improve. Then last year, with Julius turning into a pumpkin and all of these other things going wrong, they gave RJ 30 usage for the last 40 games. And on not great, but not terrible efficiency, he averaged about 24 a game. And it was like, okay, this is your extension eligible year. We'll either going to trade you for Donovan Mitchell, or we're going to extend you. And obviously, we know better than anybody what ended up happening last summer. And then this year, it's like, okay, now you're the third guy. You're still going to get a ton of usage, especially in the second unit. And I'm glad you hit on the defense, Justin. The way his defense has fallen off a cliff. And I always hesitate to do this and talk about like players being out of shape. I'm an overweight podcaster, like in a studio in Queens. So I'm not someone to talk about a professional athlete's fitness. I will just say, as an observer, he's just not as quick anymore. He can't guard wings anymore. The first step is all you need to get past RJ Barrett, no matter where you are on the floor. And it's why I was going to hint at, we were talking about the loss of Julius. Josh Hart at the four is not my thought. It's RJ Barrett. He might actually be more equipped. Now, Evan Mobley might be a different monster. I don't know if there is going to be an RJ Barrett stopping him. But as far as like what he's probably more suited to guard with this at this point in the season, where it's like that's been the comment about him all year. It's like he looks slow, you know, like he's not laterally able to move as well. And he probably needs to be guarding fours more than it's threes and twos nowadays. So, look, all that being said, he still will have like a 30-point game here and there when you need him. That's been the belief all season, that like don't write him off because there's going to be like a big game four in the playoffs.
The Julius Randle game is going to need to become the RJ Barrett.
It's going
to
be the RJ Barrett
game,
exactly. So like as your fourth guy, like listen, in the bubble 3 years ago, there was a Tyler Hero game. Like we all watched it and remembered it. And then it was like, okay, like
That's been a big part of my argument for having Caris LeVert around. I'm like,
so there you go.
You know what? Like, he can give you 41 points against Boston. And what I've loved about Caris, though, and why I've been more willing to kind of ride the roller coaster of his offense is there's been consistent playmaking. The defensive effort has consistently been there. He hits the glass. And, like, having a very, very good pick-and-roll ball handler is a very important thing when you're on a team that employs Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. So, yeah. Like, for me, that has always kind of made it worthwhile to have Caris. And I think it's a big part of why the starting lineup with Caris, or sometimes the closing lineup with Caris, has been so good this season, because you just have that extra playmaker. But the unfortunate thing about that lineup is it hasn't always been great for him. And I think that's why it's so exciting for Carter and myself to see him settle in so well in the sixth man role and really find his footing late in the season. But these guys that can get hot and get 30, 40 points per game, like even in today's NBA, I still do think that that's an underrated skill, because not everybody can do that. Not everybody can get the per 36 numbers, right? Like, oh, we just need to get this guy more shots. Getting shots is a skill set. Like actually getting, like, I forget who said it, but they're like, the hardest thing about scoring 30 is getting enough shots, like actually like taking enough shots to go get those 30 points. Like, I think people just kind of assume that it's something that a coach can decide or a player can decide. It's really not that simple.
Yeah. It's hold on. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask a little bit about the defense and your kind of point about the fact that you feel like you can't put him on wings and almost certainly not guards if you're not comfortable with him on wings. How bad is that kind of trickle down to how the Knicks are going to want to stop a team like the Cavs? Because, you know, you do have Isaac Okoro out there who is going to serve as the you know, the ceremonial hiding spot for any player you want to have, you know, you either want to hide or you want to have, you know, low strain. But if you do that, and I'm talking with the starters, you kind of then have to say, Jalen, you got to guard Donnie or Darius. And you got to expend a lot more energy than you'd otherwise hope to do. If you're the coach and let's say Toppin is that starter, and is playing some legitimate minutes in the series, what do you put RJ on Donovan or Darius and press your luck, or do you just say, buddy, you're just gonna hide out on Okoro and please try to get in some passing lanes?
And see, Justin, I brace yourself, this is where if I'm the coach, RJ's not in my lineup in crunch time, unfortunately. This is where Quentin Grimes has earned it. As far as I'm concerned, Josh Hart has earned it. You hide for, I mean, look, you guys would know better than I would if Okoro is a better shooter than the last time the Knicks played the Cavs, but It seemed like the Knicks plan was like, we'll let him shoot as often as we want, and that's where we'll hide Jalen Brunson. There's going to be switching all throughout crunch time, probably all throughout the game, whether it be so that way Mitchell and Garland can take advantage of Brunson. We've seen that a lot recently with some teams. Minnesota did it like perfectly, and it was the first time we noticed like JB getting targeted. Having said that, this is where Quickley comes into play. Like Quickley's been closing games a lot since the Josh Hart trade, and it's been RJ that in certain games, like against Miami, like you need the size to guard Jimmy Butler. But when the other team's best players are guards, yeah, sorry, RJ, we're here. We got the points out of you from the second unit, from the first several minutes of each half. But I kind of like my chances going with this much smaller lineup. Like maybe you could see how he is guarding Evan Mobley in those starter minutes. And maybe he's your close. It's him or Grimes for me, though. Like that's my thought. Like
so you're
Emmanuel your Quickley has to close. Josh Hart has to close. Like those guys have to be on the floor.
So you're closing five, just so we can all, you know, agree on the same reality, is, you know, in a world where Brunson or where Randall is not available. Cause again, good comeback. We don't know.
We'll see.
You know, science is insane.
He might go to the LeBron James of feet.
Yeah, no kidding.
It
would be Brunson, Quickley, Grimes, Hart, and Robinson or Hartenstein.
Yeah.
And that's so crazy to me, you know, because I all of a sudden what I hear as a Cavs fan is, well, if we really believe that Evan has taken the offensive leap that we think he's taken in the last month and a half. Really ever since Kendrick Perkins asked where the hell is Evan Mobley, then boy is that the test, right? Like if Evan Mobley cannot consistently ruin Josh Hart's life at the four, then we know he's got some more seasoning that he's going to need in the offseason.
I want to add, this is where the Knicks drop coverage will come into play. He's not going to be one-on-one against Josh Hart. There will be a lot of doubling and different looks that they'll throw at him. So that way, like, you're going to have to beat the Knicks, not at the rim. You're going to have to beat them on the perimeter. That's how teams have beaten the Knicks this season. So that's where I think, you know, Mobley will be able to take advantage of it. And look, this is just one man's opinion of what I've seen this season. They may very well go with RJ Barrett at the four over Grimes, but look,
I think Mobley's advantage over RJ should not be that high. Or should probably be less than his, or I don't know. I think it should be equivalent to him going up against Hart at the four.
Again, this is the new reality that exists post Julius Randle injury. And this is why
it's a hard question to answer.
Knicks fans going into the series were like, listen, I worry about them against Boston. I worry about them against Miami, against Philly. Like Milwaukee is not even a conversation. But like you match up really well, whether it be Mitchell Robinson against Jared Allen. It may not be a wash, but both like are comparable centers.
Don't you dare say it's a wash. We respect Jared Allen in this house.
Okay, I you've heard my concerns about the consistency of Mitchell Robinson. But if it's the night that he decides, oh, I'm going to be the best offensive rebounder and rim protector in the league, that it at least for a night can be a wash. The point is, I'm confident in that matchup. Randall against Mobley is at least like a matchup, like Okoro against RJ. Like you see what I'm saying? Like the two guards between Quickley and Brunson, you guys have the upper hand. We don't have a bad hand though. And I think then when you get into the second unit and you introduce a Josh Hart and a Quentin Grimes and a Isaiah Hartenstein into the mix, there was a lot of confidence. And now post Julius Randall, you're gonna have to figure out a different way to do this. So that's where, look, my answer would be see if RJ is up for the test at first, see if Obi's up for the test. But like, what am I going to figure out by game three what works against Evan Mobley? And by then, does anything? Yeah. So that's where I would try to lean into the small, like the small ball of it all and see if you can, you know, beat them from the perimeter, which, look, might not be the best way to do it, because as you said, they're probably more beatable on the offense, on the defensive glass. But listen, this is why Tibbs makes the big bucks, and hopefully they figure something out over the next 2 weeks before this series even starts.
Yeah, like I was never offended by Knicks fans saying we want to play the Cavs, because if I'm putting myself in Knicks fans' shoes, Yeah, that's my pick. Like, I think that
better play them than these other.
Yeah, I think the best three teams in the NBA are the top three seeds in the Eastern Conference, and I've said this before, and I'm sure any Knicks fans listening to this would like to hear this too. Like, I think the Cavs and the Knicks would come out of the West. Like, I'd give them a good shot to come out of the West if they were in the Western Conference. Like, I do think the New York Knicks are that good, and I hate injuries. Like, the Cavs went through their share as well, right? Like, it drives me nuts to see kind of a very interesting postseason matchup kind of be colored by this with Julius Randle either being limited or out for the series. But I do think the Knicks still have enough pieces for it to be an interesting chess match, right? Like, you ask, has Isaac Okoro approved as a shooter? The answer is yes. But when you're dealing with two elite guards in Garland and Mitchell and two big men in Mobley and Allen, you are going to cheat off of Isaac Okoro. Like, that's just going to happen. We saw that with the 2016 team. Teams would cheat off of J.R. Smith because the other threats were so pressing that sometimes we're just going to give up a J.R. Smith open three and hope he missed, right? Like, and you can't necessarily hide a guy on Isaac Okoro now as much, because even if, like, let's say he hits three out of four threes, like, the volume isn't going to kill you. But what's going to be interesting is now that the Cavs are using him so much more as a screener and getting that player in kind of action and get them involved defensively, it's a way that they went at Ja Morant when the Grizzlies were trying to hide him on them, and that worked to great effect. They've done it on a number of kind of weaker defenders. What does Tibbs do if that's the case, right? Like, do you want Jalen Brunson being in those actions, or do you want RJ Barrett being in those actions? So I think there's enough chess pieces in Tibbs' arsenal that he's going to be able to make adjustments, and we're going to see how the Cavs make adjustments in turn. So I do think it's going to be an interesting series. I honestly do feel bad for you guys. Like, I hope that Julius Randle recovers ahead of schedule, because we're not expecting championship this season. Like, we've even though the Cavs have, like, the stats of contending team, I think they need seasoning. I think they need to be tested. And I think the Knicks are a team that's uniquely positioned to do that. So I want to get your best punch. I want to see what this series can be.
Yeah, there is a faction of Knicks fans that's going to be upset with me for not still preaching that, like, we're still beat Cleveland regardless, and the belief in this team that can exist at times. I'm a little more realistic about it. I do think there's a lot of memories to last year in the playoffs between Brunson and Mitchell, and that advantage hopefully still exists. I've watched enough of Mitchell this year to know he's a better defender, because he's not. I have no idea what happened last year in Utah. He's just not that player anymore. I also have seen enough of Jalen Brunson this year to know that if they're guarding each other on the floor, that is advantage Cleveland. Which is where I would expect, like, quickly gets a look, that they would just throw, like Grimes would get a look. Obviously, Josh Hart and maybe even at times RJ would get a look with the look that ends in drop coverage. Look, you said this season you don't expect to be ending in a championship. There is a hint of, like, we're just happy to be here. Like, going into this season and all of the agita of the summer of what was supposed to be Donovan Mitchell that ended up not being Donovan Mitchell, that had all of the, like, you gotta trade Randle or else going on. But and like the Jalen Brunson thing, we're all happy about Jalen Brunson, even though, like, you knew that this was going to end in a tampering charge. But at the same time, like, yeah, like, the Knicks finally have a point guard. He's arguably the best free agent acquisition in franchise history, as sad as that is to say. And, you know, if it ends in the first round after Julius got hurt, it's a lot easier to stomach, and you go into the offseason with less questions, and, you know, you see if you can pivot that way. I personally want to see what this team does faced with the adversity of trying to replace the output of a Julius Randle. And look, come playoff time, hopefully it'll be fun. Like, Madison Square Garden, I think, will also be a weapon. And, you know, we'll see how much of a weapon it can be in a 7-game series like that.
Yeah. And the Knicks are one of the best road teams in the league as well, right? So
that's the other part. Yeah.
And the Cavs are, I think they're much better than their record on the road. Their top three team in net rating on the road, but they've lost close games. And I think Knicks have the talent to make a lot of these games close, and it's going to come down to execution. And I think it's going to be interesting. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to learn a whole lot from Friday's game, especially, you know, like the March, like the Knicks.
Crunch time, I am curious. I will say this, crunch time, I am curious to see the question that Carter asked me, like, all right, what is Tibbs going with in crunch time here? You know, is RJ playing the four? Is he going with Obi Toppin at the four? Does he trust him enough on defense? And, you know, we'll see what he goes there.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating. We'll see what happens Friday. You know, it seems like now that Philadelphia kind of has three more than realistically locked up, I think the Cavs are going to play it safe with injuries. JB alluded to the same. I wonder if that goes into the decision to, you know, give Okoro more of a rest or continue to play it safe with Jared Allen. I know Chris Fedor reported that there isn't concern that either of those injuries are real serious. They're just, you know, being very cautious and taking care of those guys. So it's good to see, but we might have another Knicks game without Jared Allen. This would be the second time. I know they lost the game in Madison Square Garden with Diakite and Lamar Stevens starting in that one. And then there was the other one with the controversy with the last 2 minute report there. But you know what? I think I think it's going to be a very interesting series, and I'm looking forward to it. It seems like it's pretty much locked in that it's going to be Cavs Knicks, and I'm sure we will bug you again for more of our questions, because I didn't even get through this rundown. There's so much interesting to talk about. I'm sure we will get that in for a playoff preview. But before we wrap this up, let the people know what you got going on. Plug away.
Well, thank you guys seriously for having me. And it's always good to link up with two people that I respect in the podcast, specifically the team niche content industry. You guys kind of set the standard when we came to Blue Wire. It's like, oh, the Chase Down guys are here. And then you left for the Cavs. So it was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of goals, you know. So thank you for having me. And you can find me and all of my work at Knicks Film School. We have a YouTube channel where you can search Knicks Film School, the Twitter account, Nick Film School, SKOOL, because we're cool like that. It's the same on Instagram and on Facebook as well. And we have a podcast that we put a lot of work into, whether it be off days when we have just a kind of state of the team episodes. And then on game day, we have a pregame show that I host, a pregame podcast that I host, and then a postgame podcast that is live on YouTube right after games and then gets cut into multiple parts afterwards. You ever want to get the pulse of how Knicks fans feel after a game? I feel we're a good place to go and find it. So Knicks Film School, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and good friends of the guys over at the Chase Down. So.
Well, now you're just making assumptions. I don't know about all that.
Listen, no, let's see how a 7-game series goes and if those friends still exist at the end.
No, you guys work your ass off. You do terrific work. And honestly, like I know going into a game against any team, I'm always listening to a podcast from another network. And obviously, I assume a lot of fans will be doing the same thing going into a series against the Knicks. Knicks Film School is your one-stop shop. You guys do terrific work. So thank you again for joining us. We really do appreciate it. Big thanks to everyone that tuned in live as well. Make sure if you want to support us, you like and subscribe. Click notification bell on YouTube so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, so you can leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.